Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio Show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Well, good Monday morning to you all, our favorite listeners, and thank you for joining us. I'm Cecile Barile, and I'm hosting Serving Up Diversity. We've got an exciting program for you today, so let's get started. You know, it's very obvious we're going to be talking about coaching and coaches, and it's really obvious why coaches are needed in sports like football, like yesterday's game, or training for the Olympics. But why bring them into the workplace? Do we really need another quote-unquote boss or someone telling us what to do? Well, our guest today is going to answer that question and several others. And I want to welcome Dr. N. Elizabeth Freed, who's president of the San Diego Professional Coaches Alliance, also as SDPCA, that's how she's known. And welcome, Elizabeth. It's so wonderful to have you this morning.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here and looking forward to sharing with your listeners.
I'm looking forward to that, too. And so let's kind of start with when we talk about coaches. You know, we often immediately think about coaches being football coaches or basketball or soccer or some other kind of coach in the athletic industry. But what's the difference between, if there is one, coaches in sports, Elizabeth, and coaches in the workplace?
Well, coaches in the workplace require you to answer your own questions, discover your own answers, and draw your own conclusions and set your own direction for achievement and success. A sports coach is generally helping you develop a skill or guiding you to be more effective, but telling you what to do. It's very, very different. And there's also another misconception between a coach and a psychologist that I think is important for us to differentiate. And I like to generally tell the story of, and I'll ask you to kind of indulge me on this one, but I like to use the analogy of driving a car. So imagine for a moment, if you would, you were driving your car and you looked in the rear view mirror. Aside from perhaps seeing your eyes, what do you see when you look in the rearview mirror?
I see if there's anybody right behind me.
Right. You see what is behind you. And a psychologist spends most of their time having you look in the rearview mirror to discover what was behind you. A coach, on the other hand, wants you to get from point A to point B, and they're having you look through the windshield and check the side view mirrors to see what might be coming up on you and creating an obstacle to get in your way. So that's a differentiator. Does that make sense to you?
It absolutely makes sense, and so that means now I'm going to look in the back, I'm looking in the front, I'm going to look at the sides.
Right. I would say we spend very little time looking in the back as coaches.
Yes.
We are primarily having you look through the windshield and then identifying what obstacles might be coming up on you along in your side view mirrors.
That, I like that. And, you know, for so long there weren't coaches in the workplace, and that has been in the last, what, how many years now? 10 or more?
Well,
has
I think
it, been
it
longer
started
than
post about 20 some years ago.
About 20 some years ago. And so, therefore, why would an organization really hire a coach to work with their typically senior-level executives? I mean, what are they trying to accomplish?
Well, it varies. It just varies. Sometimes they want coaches there for just general leadership development in whatever areas they want them to continue to develop their strengths and potentially build skills in other areas. Sometimes It could be someone that's being placed in a president's position because they've had the technical background and they're really knowledgeable, but they don't have the executive presence. They don't know how to stand. They lack the poise. They lack the ability and confidence to stand in front of a board to be able to present their case. While they may have been even the founder of that company, they don't have, and the company's been sold or has gone public, they need to have someone who has that ability, and they might hire a coach for that. Sometimes it's a performance management issue where this person is just completely like a bull in a china shop and very task-focused and lacking in emotional intelligence and doesn't have the interpersonal skills to be able to really motivate and lead that team. So it goes really across the board, and I've worked at all different levels depending on what that person has a need for.
What's the lowest level that you have worked with?
I would say myself, the director level. That would be one step below senior management. And I generally prefer not to work at that level. And this is a preference because it's not as interesting to me. I'm there as an executive coach. I bring a little different perspective because my background is compensation. And as a compensation consultant, I got in the business end of the business. So in order for me to design compensation programs, they needed to be aligned with the business vision, mission, and strategy. So I have a tendency to ask very business-related questions from a more strategic point of view, and the lower-level folks tend to not be strategic in their thinking, all right? They aren't involved in the strategy. That's not saying they shouldn't be, but they aren't. And so for me, for my own personal preference, that's my preference.
I see. And actually, you brought up something, a question that raises a question for me, too, when you're saying, you know, that they're it's primarily looking at the executive levels, but you're looking at you might do something with a director, and it's basically business focused. Do they ever, or have you experienced, do it on a, because some of the personal issues come into it?
Well, the personal issues are usually more life coaching kinds of things. I am an executive coach. Now, we also get into some of those things sometimes. I had an individual who had a very toxic boss. And this was a situation where she had identified her role was that of risk management, and she had identified a potential fraud situation and brought it to the attention of her boss, who swept it under the rug. Now, her job was risk management, and so she felt, I have to do my job. My boss is not doing the right thing, and she went over her boss's head and brought it to legal's attention, and they agreed with her, and as a result of that, the boss's hand got slapped. Well, now the boss was gunning for her, and the boss herself was in a position to understand the law, and she called me in a panic saying, I'm afraid for my job. I don't know what to do. I feel like I'm being,
retaliated.
Right, and yeah. And so my first step conversation with her was, all right, let me help you, first of all, get your power back and calm down, and discussed with her, if your boss is knowledgeable about legal, your boss also knows that she cannot do anything obvious because we have whistleblower laws. That's number one. Number two, because she knows she can't do anything obvious, you're going to be dealing with somebody who's going to do it surreptitiously. And we'll try to nail you in a way that is very sly. So what I have to do, and this is a person who was not very politically savvy and just didn't understand because she was so committed to doing her job, what I worked with her on was how to be more politically savvy.
Mm-hmm.
That meant such things as when she went to events, she was not to exceed more than 2 glasses of wine and only 1 glass of wine per hour so that she could be in an observing position to see what was going on, because that could later be used against her. So she needed to understand where she was just being warm and friendly and not realizing how these kinds of things could work against her. So sometimes I get involved in those things. If the case is interesting to me, if it's not interesting to me, this woman was terrified. And I had, having worked in a corporation, understood how things like that can happen. And I helped her to position herself not only to get her power back, but to also position herself in a way to the higher-ups so they could see her value to the organization. She took for granted that the fact that she was in risk management allowed her to see all the different divisions, whereas most people were siloed, and how to parlay that to make herself even more valuable to the organization.
And do you find that you, in your interactions as a coach, is power something that comes up a good portion of the time? Issues around power?
Not a lot, no. I mean, not necessarily any more than anything else. Maybe for women more so than men, because if I'm dealing, it's usually they all have legitimate authority, so it's not the issue. It's not so much power as it is helping them build confidence. Sometimes, I mean, I deal with men that it would be very surprising that they're placed in high-level positions and they're terrified. Because maybe they were very good in their technical field, and they were great salespeople, but they are not necessarily great leaders. And they go, gee, can I even do this job? But they're not going to let anybody else know. And I create a very safe environment for them, so they end up being very forthright with me because they know that. While I hold them very accountable, that there is a great deal of compassion and, for at the sake of sounding sappy, love that comes from me. I ask very, very deep and piercing questions, oftentimes known as the heat-seeking missile. So they can't really get away with much with me, but they honestly know that I have their best interests at heart, but I have to make sure that they are committed. So one of the things when coaching is I tell people, you're going to have to put in the work if you're going to want to have results. It's just like exercising. You got to put in the work. If they aren't, if they're doing this because their company is forcing them to do it and they're being compliant, I'm not interested in working with them. Because for me, this is really sacred work, and I am committing as much of myself to this process as they are, and it requires me to be 100% present so that I can really listen, and I have to sort of listen between the lines and be able to hear what they are really telling me and to acknowledge it and to hear, because many times clients can't even articulate what the issues are. They don't even know themselves, and so we have to really get to what the real issues are, and I may do that. You know, I may start out with some assessments, whether it's self-awareness or 360, but really truly getting to the issues.
So it's something that really has a lot of depth to it, and you know, as you're talking about this, I mean, it's obvious to me, besides the fact that I do know you, but it's obvious to me you have a heart for this. And,
I really,
you know,
do.
You mentioned the word love.
Passionate about it.
Yes, you're extremely passionate, and so that you then can pass that on, as well as show whoever you're coaching how important this is to both of you, and how you want to help.
It's
and
a partnership.
Obviously, it is a partnership, and you know, one of my questions was to say, what do you as a coach bring to the table? Well, it's a partnership. But there's a willingness that you have that comes from inside, that you're willing to put yourself, and maybe I'm a little bit off on this, but put yourself in a position of some vulnerability too.
Well, absolutely. You know, the thing, you know, if you think about a psychologist, they never tell their own, they never reveal anything about themselves personally. The coaching situation is different. I may share a personal story with them about something I did that may not have been so grand, when they are feeling like they're beating themselves up on something. Mm-hmm. And I say, listen, here's an example of something that happened to me, and I survived it. You know, something like
yes.
that. A psychologist would never do that. That's their rules are different rules.
You're absolutely right. Years ago, I know, I had an experience with a psychologist, and I knew I was doing all the talking, and she was doing all the questioning, but I wasn't hearing any solutions. So I do understand that, too.
Well, a coach generally keeps asking questions and moving you, and then, see, I coach from a brain-based perspective, and that means I want to make sure that the individual is placed in a position to feel comfortable and be able to think. Here's the deal. From a neural network standpoint, we don't give advice because everybody's experience base is different. So if I were to give somebody advice, ultimately it's saying to them, you're too stupid to think for yourself.
Yeah.
And that is a negative. But if I keep asking questions to help mm-hmm. them come to some solutions for themselves, or the other way of approaching it is, I would say to them, well, are you interested? How would you like me to work with you on this? Are you interested? Because if they say, well, I don't know, or I have no place to go, well, where could you go to do this? And talk to them through that. Or are you interested in me giving you some ideas to think about? Now I'm asking them permission. Now they're not feeling defensive because once they give me permission, then I can tell them. But even if I tell them give them a solution, that solution is what I would do, not what they would necessarily do.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to be careful when you go down those lines to make sure that they understand that this is all about them. I had a client call me the other day when we were meeting for our session, and she said to me, you know, I know we had something different scheduled today to talk about, and I know you had different plans for this day, but I have something else on my mind that I want to talk about. And my response is, this is all about you. So if
yes.
you find something on your mind that is more pressing than what we had scheduled, I'm open to that. It's up to you. It's very client-led. I don't direct it.
No, I like that very much. Before we continue, I want to take a moment out for us to recognize our sponsors.
Hey, thank you for that, Cecile. I want to say a big recognition to our lovely sponsor, Microsoft. The question always becomes, where do you want to go today? But Microsoft has a number of different products geared for small businesses, large organizations, and we want to say thank you to them for being one of our lovely sponsors. So, Cecile, back to you.
Well, thank you, Michelle. You know, Elizabeth, you have so many skills and as I said a couple of times, the heart to do this. You bring all this to the table. Can you give us another example of how you've taken an executive not only to a higher level but also to being a better person?
Well, I think what happens is oftentimes we're working on communication skills, and what I hear over and over and over again from my clients is that what I learned as a result of coaching has made me not only a better leader, but a better father, a better husband, a better friend. So these skills are transferable into life, and I think probably one of my best stories, and I've been given permission to share this story, was I was called one Friday afternoon at around 4 o'clock by the president of a company I had coached, and I was very surprised to hear from him. He wouldn't call me without an appointment. So I said, well, what a surprise to hear from you on a Friday at 4 o'clock. And he said, well, I'm calling you because I'm leaving to go out of town, and I got a problem with one of my guys. So I said, okay. And he said, I was wondering if you could talk to him. I said, sure. So I went and made an appointment with this fellow, and this fellow had told me that He just, well, the president said he kind of lost his confidence like I did when you met me, and I just would like to get him back. I said, okay, we'll see what we can do. So I went to talk to this fellow, and he began to tell me that the company had recently been acquired, and his job had really changed, and he had, and how he had worked on some very complex projects, and how he really liked to make sure that his hands were in it. He liked to be in it. He called it in the scrum, which is a crewing term where you're really right in it. Mm-hmm. And that he just wasn't sure of his place, that he had pieces and parts of his job changed, and he was elevated to this level that really didn't get him to feel in it. So I was using it from a neuroscience standpoint, a brain-based coaching, that sometimes what happens to executives is that they are elevated to a level where they're not having being able to touch it and feel it. And this particular individual was from an engineering background. And so sometimes they feel like they're losing their skill if they're not going to be able to use it. And then they go down a path of feeling isolated and depressed because they don't feel like they're losing their skill. And I was thinking probably an approach I would do is to help him reframe his thinking so that he can see that he's adding value to the organization and get reengaged and reenergized. So there was a 360 feedback that report that had been taken, which was getting feedback from his boss, his peers, and his direct reports. And he said, I'd like you to take a look at my 360. Well, I read it. And it said that he was like the absent-minded professor, that he seemed unfocused. Sometimes he'd shoot from the hips. Sometimes he'd go into detail. And there was, it was just all over the board. And I thought, you know, the standards coaching protocol may not be right for this man. Something just doesn't feel right to me. So I'm going to go out on a limb. And I wound up saying to him, I need to ask some personal questions, and they're health-related. Would that be okay? I just need to clear something up before we go forward. And he said, yes. And I said, when was the last time you had your testosterone checked? And I saw him raise his eyebrow. And I said, you know, this has nothing to do with sex, because testosterone is a hormone that affects mental alertness and acuity and focus. And he shared with me he had had it checked recently. It was all very normal. I said, what about other thyroid or anything like that? All normal. So I said to him, well, now I'm really going to go out on a limb. I said, are you familiar with neurofeedback and brain training? And he said, no. And I explained to him what that was about and how I had used it because I was having some short-term memory problems and how it had helped me. And I tested it before I would recommend it to a client. And I said, in order for this practitioner to know what to do, he had to do some brain mapping for me to identify what the problem was. And I explained to him what the maps did for me and how I understood what was going on in my brain and how we needed to correct it. I said, now, he might be, I said, I think we need to rule out anything that could be standing in your way. And he looked at me so forlornly and said, you know, at this stage, I think I'm willing to try anything. So I was very gratified by that, because this is an engineer who is, it's not science, you know, and he was willing to try it. So he went to see the practitioner who in the intake said to him, have you ever had a traumatic brain injury such as, any kind of accident or anything like that? And he said, of course, no. Well, when the mapping came back, the practitioner said to him, you know, it's very interesting you said you've never had a traumatic brain injury, because right here on your right temple,